And into a Wednesday morning edition of My Car Guru we sail, and we say hello to Lenny Lawson, the car guru. Hey, Lenny.
Hey, man. How are you this morning?
Doing pretty good. I hope you are.
Well, today is pick up grandchild day at daycare and take her on an adventure.
Oh, good.
It will begin at approximately 11 a.m. This morning. And she's going to be the passenger, but she's going to be directing where we're going. So that's Abby's little girl. Her name is Ivy.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ivy is in charge of Pop Pop today. But before we do that, I thought we should probably do a radio show. I've got Ivy's mother right here with me, Abby, my daughter.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Abby.
Ivy is very excited about her day with Pop Pop. She has all kinds of plans, so we'll see where they end up.
I think one of them includes going to the Davy Crockett campground.
I know last time I got a picture at about 4:30, which is about an hour before dinner time, and Pop Pop had stopped to get her a donut. So,
you know, is that not appropriate?
You know what? You only live one time, and if that's what she gets to do with her Pop Pop, that's fine by me.
Yeah, she'll probably never forget that donut. But anyway, I was kind of reminiscing this morning. There's been some interesting activity going on in this particular market, Greene County market. When we moved here in 1971, about 49 years ago, there were 7 new car dealers in Greenville, and now there are 3. Of course, when there were 7, all 7 were what you would call locally owned and operated.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Bachman Bernard is selling out to a company out of Florida, you've got, and of course, Chance Scott is not technically from here. You know, he's a, I think he grew up in Chance. Did he play football for Johnson City or Science Hill?
Yeah, he played for Science Hill. I called the games for them when he played, as a matter of fact.
So he's almost a local boy. So, you know, but as far as Greene County, he's not. But, you know, it just got me thinking about locally owned and operated. You know, that used to be a slogan, you know, for small business in just about any town in America. Locally owned and operated. So what does that mean, Tim? I mean, what does that, does that hold any marketing value anymore, you know, in this global economy with Amazon and,
mm-hmm.
and all these big box stores from all over the place that have pushed out the little guys, you know, the economy of Walmart and Costco and, you know, what does it mean to you? Does it still hold any value? That's an open-ended question, Tim.
Well, I think it depends on the consumer, I think. I think once you reach, if you're a certain age, maybe even as high as in our age bracket, maybe it means a little more to you, I think, if it's locally owned and operated. But now, younger people are grown up in a society and have grown up in a society where they probably don't pay as much attention to that. It's just, where can I get it quicker? Where can I get it cheaper, you know?
Yeah. What about the millennial mindset, Abby? Would you agree?
I don't think I'm technically a millennial.
Okay.
I'm a little bit older than the millennial, but I think it has, I've had several people in the recent past that have reached out to me and said that they wanted to shop locally, they wanted to keep their business with their hometown dealership, and that's really refreshing to me. But I do think that my age, I'm 35, we do want it faster. Not necessarily cheaper, but we want it fast. We've gotten to the point where we make one click and it's delivered to our door in 2 days. And I've even noticed in myself an impatience for things that take longer delivery times than 2 days.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming from who knows where. And it's a little bit troubling to recognize that trait in myself, but I do think that that's kind of the way we're going.
Yeah.
You know, we were outsiders when we moved here from West Virginia. And the acceptance, was very, very slow to come. The rumor was my dad had won, the dealership in a poker game. It just so happened that the guy that owned the dealership and his circle of other dealers and friends were all big poker players.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was just that was the only possible explanation. But the guy that owned the dealership was a gentleman named Joe Bewley at the time, wonderful gentleman. Joe became a senator or a state representative, and I mean, he's got highways down here named after him. Just a wonderful family. His wife actually became my Sunday school teacher, grew up knowing his sons and, you know, we had a great relationship. But after talking to Joe, my dad said Joe was determined not to sell the dealership to anybody local.
Hmm.
He just did not. I think, I don't know whether it was a pride thing I mean, there were plenty of very qualified dealers and car people down in Greenville at that time that would have loved to have had the Chevy store in Greenville, Tennessee. But he kept it secret. It was a total surprise. And this guy that worked for Chevrolet Motor Division in Charleston, West Virginia, named by the name of Max Lawson, was the one that ended up buying the dealership. And so, you know, we weren't locally owned. I mean, to me, what makes that valid, I think, that statement is, do they live there? You know, do they live in the community? Do they function, you know, in that community, pay taxes in that community, you know, contribute to, you know, local projects and stuff. And to me, that's the advantage. Of course, most of the employees are local, although we do have, I'd say 10% of the people that work for me, drive, or maybe more than that, drive from outside of Greene County to get here to work. And, you know, so that's valid. But, you know, I look at some of the long-term businesses in the Tri-Cities, just like I always bring up Mahoney's. And of course, I don't know Zach's. Zach's was always, it's not a corporate entity, is it? That's one of my favorite furniture stores. You know, I think about other small businesses in the Tri-Cities, and like Evergreen, for example, the Garden Center, that's the Valk family. I just like supporting those, but they're becoming fewer and fewer, you know, far between, aren't they?
Yeah,
they sure are.
They certainly are, yeah.
But there's a customer service aspect, you know, when you're, I handwrite our thank you letters to our sold customers, and I just, because it matters so much to a family-owned business to have relationships with your customers in the long term, you know. It's something that, you know, we've lost two of our very, very loyal, kind customers in the past couple of weeks. And, you know,
They died,
mm-hmm. Yeah. They, both of them quite unexpectedly, too, and they were faces that we've seen in this dealership for years and years. And we take a lot of pride in knowing people by name, knowing their family members, and it means a lot more to a dealership like us than it does to some, I think.
You know, the difference about the car business and a lot of other small businesses is we, as far as the product that we sell, Fords and Nissans at my dealership, all dealers across this country pay the same price for their cars. There's no such thing as a volume discount buying from the factory. That's not true with a lot of small business. You know, a lot of small business buys from distributors, and they pay have different price structures, different bonus structures. But in the car business, it is a level playing field. Matter of fact, if your dealership is right next door to the factory, you pay the same $1,200 freight charge to get that vehicle to your dealership, which is right next door, as I do down here in Tennessee. And so, you know, what has done that has been dealer agreements and state franchise laws. And these franchise laws have leveled that playing field. So, you know, you can have a dealership the size of Reichardt up in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, probably the largest volume dealer in our region, the Cincinnati region. He pays exactly the same thing. He can't sell a Ford Fusion any cheaper than I can. And so, you know, that gives small car dealers an advantage to still be in a smaller community and still be able to compete mm-hmm. and survive. You know, our advertising footprint isn't going to be as big. I mean, I can't afford to spend the advertising dollars that a higher volume dealer could, but I can do everything they can do. And I mean, that's why you see for as long as, now I think the Ford dealer in Irwin, they may have closed. I'm not sure. It's Neighborhood Ford. It used to be Irwin Motors, you know, for many years. You know, it allowed them to survive. You know, all those years you think about Irwin Motors, surviving against, you know, the larger dealers in Johnson City mm-hmm. and different places. It's only recently where that started to break down. And, you know, there's obviously still a market for small town dealers because, these large dealer groups are going out there and trying to buy them up, you know, trying to expand their footprint. But, you know, I always encourage folks to, you've got a relationship with a dealership and people that work there, maybe the salesperson you bought a car from or service advisor or the dealer himself. Those relationships are valuable. To me, it's kind of like having a lawyer or an accountant or a guy that sprays your house for bugs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice to be able to have somebody in your cell phone, you know, their phone number that you can pick up and call when you have a question or you have some kind of an issue. And, you know, that's why I've never been bashful about sharing my cell phone number. I mean, my phone number is 552-2020. I don't have any other cell phones. That's it. And if somebody wants to reach out to me and tell me their opinion, chew me out, give me a lead, or want me to buy a car or help them with a service problem, you know, I'm available. And I can't solve all of them, Tim, but by golly, I've got enough experience to know either who to call, what to do, and I think that makes a difference for folks. So support your locally owned businesses. The ones that still claim that, like I say, are few and far between, but they're out there. They're still out there, and they need your support, and they are a valuable part of the community. We don't want to just have UPS trucks handling all of everything that we buy, mm-hmm. you know, from now on. I think it's important. Anyway, I just wanted to go through that. We'll take our first break and come back and talk about the number one problem that you can have, or number one, the many different problems that you can have with your car, the most common ones as far as your engine is concerned. We'll be back in just a minute.
And back here on My Car Guru for this Wednesday morning. You know, one final thought about the what you were talking about before the break, Lenny, and then we'll move on to issues with cars. You know, I was thinking while you were talking in relationships, whether you're talking your spiritual life, life in general, or even business and local business, relationships is pretty much what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, there's no doubt. You know, it's and they're formed in so many ways. I know when I first came to, when I graduated from Tennessee and started working in 1978 full time for the dealership, my parents kept encouraging me to join a civic club, and I didn't want to do that. You know, that just wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and I just didn't feel comfortable. And I visited a couple civic clubs, and they just had a bunch of old people at them. You know. And older than me. I was 21 years old and by far the youngest person there. And they were just dying to have me in the club. And I finally got influenced, got a good lecture one day from a third party by the name of John Kilday. Mm-hmm. And John, I'd been friends with him for some time and known him as a family, not real good friends, but just knew him, went to church with him and stuff. And he said, Lenny, your parents were right. He said, if you don't make good connections and develop other relationships in the business community, you won't make it in a small town. Mm-hmm. And so I joined the civic club, and, you know, I joined the exchange club, and within 6 years, I was the president of the exchange club, and learned a lot, you know, learned a lot. Also, I learned that old people have a whole lot more value than young people really appreciate.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And the lessons that I learned from those people have carried me through today, and now I am one. I'm a geezer myself.
You are not.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did want to talk a little bit about cars this morning. You know, the engine is the heart of any functioning car. I mean, used to, Tim, when you raised the hood of a car, you could see the engine.
Yeah.
And now it's really hard because it's all covered with plastic. The main automakers don't want you messing with the engine.
That's right.
You know, doing a tune-up, doing regular maintenance on an engine is beyond what most people are capable of doing. There are some gearheads out there that buy a car and like still like to change their own oil and stuff like that, but they normally don't. But, you know, the engine is still important. And if you believe that your engine is struggling, you feel like it's maybe the economy is going down, it's starting to use oil more frequently between oil changes. Of course, a lot of people don't even check their oil anymore. They just go from oil change to oil change and never really pull a dipstick, probably because they can't find it, you know. But mm-hmm. one of the main causes of engine failure is poor lubrication. I mean, it is absolutely vital mm-hmm. that your engine receives enough oil and in its moving parts. The basic internal components of an engine have not changed. A lot of the stuff around it has changed, and there's some technology inside the engine that has changed. But making sure that your vehicle is that the oil is fresh, you know, that you're changing your oil at least every 5,000 miles, unless you're using a total synthetic. Sometimes they say you can go as long as 10,000 miles. I'm just not a fan of that. If I even put synthetic oil in my engine, I'm going to change the oil more frequently than that. But poor lubrication is one of the main causes of engine failure. Another still part of the oil system is the failing oil pump. It is extremely serious for the lifespan of any engine. If an oil pump fails, it's going to starve the engine of necessary lubrication. It's just not getting to all of the parts of the engine. You know, your engine oil will settle in the oil pan, and it'll just stay there unless the oil pump pumps it to the top of the engine, which creates this circulation inside that your engine needs. You know, that's why it's so important also to use the right engine oil viscosity, you know, like 10W40 or 10W30 or 2050. use what is recommended for your engine, because if you use the wrong viscosity oil, then it could starve your upper valve train, your camshaft, and those parts of the oil that they need when they need it, especially as it gets colder. And then older, dirty oil has the propensity to leave deposits and debris on certain engine parts like intake valves and spark plugs, and not to mention the combustion chamber itself. But it's so important. That's just another reason for making sure that your engine is the engine oil is changed on a frequent basis. Another thing that can cause engine failure is inadequate fuel and air compression. Now, poor compression of both fuel and air inside the car engine, it can be caused by broken valve seals, holes within the cylinders, the piston rings that surround the piston as it goes up inside the cylinder. And air and oil can leak past those, causing uneven wear and can wear your engine out. There, again, it's oil driven. You know, it's something that has to do. You didn't realize oil was so important to Jeff.
Well, I mean, it seems kind of the equivalent of keeping your body hydrated. You know, it's a similar concept.
Yeah, it's like the blood, yeah. The blood of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
Another major cause of failure is a blocked engine radiator. Oil, coolant, you know, oil is important, but coolant is equally important. It has to be kept clean. That's why it's important. There's a lot of different companies out there that, like independent shops and dealerships that sell flushes, Tim. I mean, I don't know if you've ever paid to have your engine flushed or your transmission flushed, but the only real flushing that I think is important is the cooling system flush.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you change out your coolant, it's important to have a power flush done. It's an extra charge. I mean, they can just drain out your coolant and put new coolant in, but I think it's worth the extra money to have it flushed. Now, the only unfortunate thing with that is if it's an older car, that can create a place where, I mean, it can make a leak show up, because if it was full of debris and it was that debris was packed into a hole in the radiator, when you clean that out, that could start a leak. So it's important to get that done. But if you have a hole in your radiator, you know, you need to get your radiator fixed.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other things, damaged oxygen sensors. An inaccurate oxygen sensor is dangerous, not only for your engine, but for the rest of the car, too. If the sensor does not give your car the right information about how much oxygen remains in the exhaust and how much fuel is in the diesel tank, you run the risk of a lot of inefficiencies in your engine. It's going to waste money, and it also means that your engine is not operating at peak efficiency. And when it doesn't, over time, that has a bad effect on the longevity of the engine. So that the only way to know that, Tim and Abby, is if your check engine light comes on, okay? You're not going to know that. And it's so important to not ignore that check engine light or put a piece of tape over it so you don't see it.
Or a picture over it.
Or a picture, yeah. So these are just some things that can cause engine failure. They're all preventable. If you have a failure but while it's under warranty, it will be paid for as long as you did the maintenance. But I've seen the manufacturer kick on a engine replacement once they pulled off the oil pan and they saw that it was full of sludge. And that's obvious that the customer was not changing oil. So change that oil, use the recommended brand. While the vehicle is under warranty, get all of your maintenance done at the car dealership. I understand that it's easier to go to the Jiffy Lube sometimes. You just think about it. You just drive up, get in line, get it done. But I'm telling you, you're a lot better off if you go to the dealership and get that kind of maintenance done. So we'll take our last break. We'll be back here in just a minute. Well, Abby had to fly the coop. She had a situation she needed to take care of in service. You know, we're very responsive to any type of customer situation because we're out there in the media and stuff like that as far as advertising. You know, it's very common for people to walk in the showroom and say, yeah, I need to speak with Abby, or I want to speak with Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
And that availability, I think, is important. If we are pretending to be a family or portraying ourselves as a locally owned business and active in the business, then we need to be here, and we are. And, you know, so when there is a situation, whether you are, you know, you live in Kingsport and you do business with Rick Hill or the Toyota dealership up there, it's so good to be able to have somebody that you can call on. And so don't forget your salesperson's name, you know, that you bought the car from. Introduce yourself. Make sure you got the business card for the service advisor and even the service manager if you can get it. You know, sometimes the service advisor serves as a guard for the service manager, mm-hmm. and they try to handle all the situations because the service manager is typically tucked away in an office in the back. But the service manager is the guy with the power when it comes to a warranty situation or a repeat repair, something that, you know, you've had to come back and get fixed a second time. I don't want to talk to the service advisor anymore. I want to talk to the service manager. And so it's important to get to know that person as well. So anyway, if you have any questions or any issues that I can help you with, don't hesitate to call me or send me a text to 552-2020, and I'll be there for you.
All right, 552-2020, that number again. That's the number of the guru, Lenny Lawson. Lenny, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, Tim, thank you.